Alan Doyle was born in Petty Harbor, a small fishing village off the coast of Newfoundland, known as The Rock. And against all odds, The Rock turned out to be a pretty good spot for launching an international music career. Today, Alan Doyle is frontman for the folk rock band Great Big Sea, which built itself up on Newfoundland folk music and has a huge fan base in both Canada and abroad. Now, after almost 20 years with Great Big Sea, Alan Doyle's released his first solo album. It's called Boy on Bridge. I'm Veronica Rickert, with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We spend this hour with Alan Doyle and bandmates Corey Tetford on guitar and backing vocals, and Kendall Carson on violin, recorded earlier in the studios of Wisconsin Public Radio. So, Alan, Boy on Bridge is your first solo album.
That's right.
And you're touring Canada and the United States. How's the tour going so far?
Awesome. This is great. We're sort of, we got 1 week behind us, a week and a day, basically. And we, it's been great fun to sort of start like a whole new band and a whole new show and all that, because we've been doing sort of the, you know, doing the, living in the same kind of, on the ship for the last little while. It's what a great sort of satellite trip from the mothership it's been, like to put a whole new little journey together. What great fun.
And is the mothership Canada or Great Big Sea?
Oh, Great Big Sea, for sure. It travels all around the world, but it's been such a pleasure, you know, to be in Great Big Sea, because it's not only fun concerts and a fun time and a fun songs to play and all that kind of stuff. You know, I feel like Great Big Sea's been kind of looked after, you know, for going on 20 years by, you know, especially people in North America, but around the world. I feel like we've sort of had the most forgiving and sort of patient fans that they come with us no matter what we're doing. And they always seem to have a great night out with us. And you know, the Great Big Sea fans have been as big or bigger part of the Great Big Sea touring schedule as us. You know, we always felt like we were only part of the celebration, you know what I mean? So it's been a great thing, and this has been fun too. So
do you remember the moment when you knew that it was time to do this solo album, that this is it, this is the moment when I'm going to step out and do this?
I know the exact moment.
What was it?
It was when me and Sean and Bob sat down after we had done the Safe Upon the Shore tour, and we said, which was just about right into March of 2011, and we decided that we weren't going to do another record before our 20th anniversary splash. Since Great Big Sea started, it's really the sort of the first honest-to-God break we've ever had from sort of like self-directed touring. And so Sean released his second solo record, and Bob did a book, and I started working on this record. And what a great treat, you know, what great fun. And then we all scurry back to the mothership.
So that was your window, and you thought, I'm going to jump.
Yeah, totally.
It's now
or
never.
Without question, yeah. Well, it's pretty funny. I mean, like, I had a chance to take a break from touring, traveling, and making music. And I could have probably done whatever I wanted, you know, to a certain degree, other than probably be like a professional ice hockey player or something like that. Ballerina, thank you, yeah. Or one of...
It's never too late.
That might have been out of the question, really, now you think about it. But I just wanted to do this. You know, I had a bunch of musical friends around the world that I've always wanted to work with. And, you know, over the course of about 10 or 11 months, we kind of managed to squeeze most of them in and have a musical day or two with them. And this record is sort of the product of it.
So as someone who reads your blog, you're from their own blog, I get the sense, and you're upfront about it, you reveal stuff about yourself.
What?
That you... Yes, oh, lots of reveals on the blog.
What kind of interview is this?
But you don't like being alone. That you get kind of fidgety when you're alone. You get lonely.
It's
and
true,
here
yeah.
You are. So I guess I'm wondering, like, did it require a certain amount of courage for you to, I guess, step out on your own and leave the mothership of Great Big Sea?
It would, you know, if, of course, I was brave enough to do it on my own. But oddly enough, I get a chance to do my quote-unquote solo record, and it's by far the most collaborative thing I've ever done. There's about 9,000 people playing on the record, and, I called my musical friends instantly. I had a chance to, hey, we've always wanted to play together, so let's go do this tour, and we'll figure it out as we go, kind of thing. And I just love that, you know. I mean, I've always confessed this. Like, I, you know, we were just joking about it, how silence bugs me, you know, and it does. And I feel bad for, you know, people who are, like, sleeping on the bus and stuff. Or maybe just a gradual edge into the day, you know what I mean? I'm sorry, but... Because I sort of wake up and I'm on full on until I crash, and that's the only speed I have, you know. But so I do. I trust me. My wife and my family, and it's been noted my entire life. I've often had to be sent into the other room, you know. But I don't know. I can't help it, I suppose. But I just love the whole experience of getting together with musical or artistic friends, working on a project, and seeing it through. You know, it's just great fun. Whether that's a record or a tour or a television show or a movie or a soundtrack or a video game score or whatever. You know, I love having those days that are different than every other day.
You talk about all the collaborators, and there's a lot on here. I can't even name them all. But at the end of the day, it's your face alone on the cover of this album. Mm. Is that weird?
Pretty
at
good
all?
Looking too, hey.
It's a nice picture.
Come on, be honest,
you know?
Huh?
Give it
pretty,
up.
Pretty fetching picture. Come on. I think it is. Hey.
Are you guys paid to agree with him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I know what you mean. I mean, it is spooky, right? It is spooky because really my entire musical career has been in the service of something other than me. And I've never been the last desk that something goes past before it goes, you know. But of course, for this one, I am. You know, and that's a lonely day, I tell you right now. And, you know, it's just a funny thing because it's not, it's rewarding, I suppose, because in the final analysis of it, you know, it's your stamp and that's the last one that goes on. But it is, no doubt about it, it's a spooky moment when you turn to the one or two or three or four people that are always around when you're, you know, finally signing off on something and they're not there.
And you know that it's on you.
That's all on you, yeah.
But it's going well, right? I've heard this album has been received really, really well. It's on the charts in Canada.
Yeah, we sold dozens already. I mean, I think
at least 15.
We're going to the middle, right to the very middle. No, it's great. I mean, it's been very well received, and that's very rewarding, and it's very fun. You know that, especially considering a lot of people who will probably hear the record initially are people who have heard me in one context. You know, for a long time. And on this record, they're hearing me in several contexts that I would never have been heard in before. You know, so it's rewarding that people hear it and still hear me in it.
Well, it's interesting because in your publicity copy, whoever wrote that, maybe it was you, I don't know, they used the phrase stepping out of the shadow. And that's a very pointed thing to say.
Mm.
And it's almost a little like this guy was ready for this. He's been...
Well, this is like a security blanket that comes with, you know, a two-decade-year-old band. You know, you stand on stage or you go do a record and you've got, you know, dozens of parachutes to save you, right? If something goes wrong or, like, you know, you have this confidence of the history of the material that you're doing. Like, you know, unless something freakish happens, that song are going to blow the place away, you know, and... You go up there armed with those guns, you know, and it's kind of irreplaceable, really.
Well, I don't want to tantalize people anymore. Let's listen to one of the tracks from the CD, and we're going to start with Break It Slow.
Sure, thanks. I wrote this one. This one is about, I call them 40-something songs. I mean, it's a funny thing that when you turn 40, which I should do in about 9 years. Come on, Kendall, hey. And I'm 43. And, you know, it's a funny time in your life when, you know, more people start breaking up than they start getting married. You go to more funerals than, you know, christenings. You know, it's just an odd time. It's sort of the in-between years, I've heard them called. So anyway, I wrote a few grown-up songs about, you know, people breaking up and stuff. Luckily, not me. So far, anyway. Thank you. Send this one out to my wife. It's called Break It Slow. You all right, then?
There you go.
We all got our buttons pushed?
Yes.
My button's pushed. I'm in tune. This is going to be awesome. You ready?
One, and a two, and a one, two, three, four.
Don't tell me I'm a loser, 'cause I feel like one tonight. I've seen my share of bruises, and I lost my share of fights. I didn't go down easy, but I went down nonetheless. Now in the morning, won't you please be up and gone like all the rest? But what am I to do after all that we've been through? There's one thing that I ask. When I'm still on the floor, make for the door. Make it easy, make it fast.
If you made up your mind, don't you waste our time. If you're leaving, won't you go? And if you're gonna break my heart, please don't you break it slow. Oh, please don't break it slow. There will be no need to linger. Let's be done with what must be done. Oh, please pull the trigger and be gone with your smoking gun. I'll ask for no forgiveness, 'cause I know you won't beg for mine. The judge and jury all agree we're both guilty in this crime. So let the gavel fall. The beauty of it all is cracked and can't be fixed. I said nobody wins, make the ending begin. Oh, make it simple and make it quick. You make it simple, make it quick. If you made up your mind, don't you waste our time. If you're leaving, won't you go? And if you're gonna break my heart, please don't you break it slow. Oh, please don't break it slow.
Don't break it slow.
Oh, no, don't you break it slow. Me a little broken, a little blue, but I'll be okay. Please don't delay, do what you gotta do. If you made up your mind, don't you waste our time. If you leave, and won't you go? And if you're gonna break my heart, please don't you break it slow. Have you made up your mind? Don't you waste our time. If you leave, and won't you go? And if you're gonna break my heart, please don't you break it slow. Oh, please don't break it slow.
Don't break it slow.
Oh, no, don't you break it slow. Don't break it slow.
Ah, it's beautiful. Thank you, guys.
That's Corey Tetford playing the guitar, by the way.
And
that's Kendall Carson playing the violin. Thanks to you both.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And I'm Veronica Rickert talking with Alan Doyle, who stopped by our studios recently. We'll be back with more after this break on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm talking this hour with Alan Doyle, frontman of the band Great Big Sea, about his first solo album called Boy on Bridge. So tell me about Break It Slow. It's a breakup song. It's saying rip the Band-Aid off quick, but tell me more about that song. Did you write that?
I wrote it really quickly one night, and some good friends of mine were getting, well, they had just broken up. Mm. And you know, it's one of those things where, again, when you break up with a girl when you're 16 or something, it seems to go really quickly. Do you know what I mean? And, like, you seem to be friends again really quickly right after that. Thank you, Andy. And, you know, when you're a grown-up and you have kids and you have, you know, all that stuff, like houses and cars and all, it just gets so complicated and so grown-up, I suppose. As a friend, someone on the outside of it watching, you just want it over.
Hmm.
You know, and it's like, you know, if you're going to do it, man, do it. Like, cut the cord right away. Like, don't linger on it. You know, like,
so this is kind of your perspective.
Yeah,
from,
I mean,
the outside.
Being friends with someone who's going through that is hard, man. You know, and so, like, it kind of breaks your heart. But
yeah, I mean, when couples split apart, it's not just the stuff that gets allocated to different places. It can be the friends.
Yeah, it's a real heartbreaker. And so I wrote that one really quick. It's like, get it done, boys. Get it done. So. But that, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. It's like that's a song that came very easy to me on during this time in my life, I suppose. And I would have never written that song when I was 20, you know, and I probably would never write it again when I'm 60. I think in your 20s or something, or in your teens, you don't think you ever make any mistakes. And if you make them, you're going to defend them to the end, you know? Whereas, like, I find, anyway, the more I advance, the more I go, like, well, yeah, I shagged that up. So sorry about that. Moving on. You know, and, you know, you become, I don't know, perhaps I shouldn't be, but I just find myself, yeah, more and more ready to admit that I just shagged something up.
Well, moving on to your voice. So it's what? It's 10:20 in the morning, and I got to doff my hat to you. Your voice sounds gorgeous. It's 10 in the morning, and you've been singing hard for at least 20 years, probably, you know, more than that.
Thank you very much, yeah. Speaking of which, can I get some of that water over there?
Can we have some water delivery on aisle 4?
And some Advil.
Coffee.
A shot of something. Thank you, love. Thank you very much.
Water? Sure, yeah, please, thanks.
So how do you keep your pipes in shape?
It's a little bit, like last night, for example, we were in Minneapolis and we had a great gig and it was over early. And there's a pile of friends, some of whom are in the room right now, that were going to the pub. And I really wanted to go to the pub, but I didn't go because I knew I had to sing here this morning and I had to sing a concert.
Making me feel guilty.
It's just a little bit of vocal management. It's a muscle that, you know, is, and mine's pretty hard. You know, I had an apprenticeship and Corey did as well. I'm not so sure about Kendall, but in the pub years, you know, like, you know, primarily as an instrumentalist, I suppose, you can get away with it, whatever. But I mean, myself and Corey, our apprenticeship was in the pubs in St. John's, you know, where, you know, you better have some steel pipes if you're going at that. You know, you show up at 8:30 and you leave at 4:30 and you sang 9 million sets, you know, and as loud as you possibly can over the din of a rummy sailor town. And, you know, once you know, just speaking as a singer, that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty steep hill to climb. Once you get to it, other stuff becomes a little easier. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that makes you a better singer necessarily. I think it just makes you sort of a tougher singer. You know, it makes touring at this level a little easier. You're way more prepared for it than someone who came out of musical theater or something, I guess. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like your days in the pit or something. I don't know, but it's all good.
I remember hearing that Pavarotti's voice teacher just had him shout the top of his lungs for as long as he could. And now he's got, well, I know his voice is probably gone now, but for years and years he had that super powerhouse voice. Yeah. And it sounds like you're saying your days in the pubs of St. John's where you're a...
Well, you have, if you're going to do that, and we all wanted to do it because, you know, we were going to school or we're doing whatever or we're living in St. John's and we wanted to be in that scene, right? You learn how to survive it. And it's different for everybody. You know, some people could do it and it never, you know, they don't have to do any kind of disciplinary stuff to their voice or drink water or do it. Like some guys I know are like, just have metal throats. I mean, really good friends of ours, you know, just they never lose their voice, whatever. And mine's pretty good. But for that, you know, I've built it up over the years to be almost ready for anything. But it takes a bit of management.
Well, I want to ask you about the pub side of your life, because I know that there are a lot of good times that happen along with these concerts.
Really?
I hear rumors of after parties.
What?
I don't think I've been to a great big sea show where Guinness hasn't been mentioned at least once.
I've heard of it. It's an Irish beer, I understand. Apparently they do quite well with it over there.
And again, I'm going to go back to your blog here.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I remember a couple of years ago, you did a little experiment. You said you were going to opt off the alcohol for a while.
Yeah.
And I know that for a musician, it's got to be hard because it's sort of packaged, it's bundled
together.
I
went 30 days on the road and I didn't drink one time, a couple of years ago, wasn't it? Yeah. It was, and I wrote a long dissertation about my report of it.
Can you tell me the why?
Why I did it in the first place?
Yeah.
I did it, I don't know, to be honest. I did it out of some kind of, I just wanted to see if I could do it, I suppose, and see what it would be like. I bet I haven't gone a month without drinking anything in my adult life. And my friend Perry, who I grew up with in Petty Harbor, said, Alan, you or I haven't gone a month without drinking since we're 13. And I thought about it. I said, Perry, that's not true. He's like, Alan, it is true. We probably haven't gone 2 weekends. Now, and I thought about it. And I was like, and it sort of spooked me a bit. And so I was like, well, I'm definitely doing it now. So I went a month without drinking.
I seem to recall at the end of the day, you sort of said, yeah, I can do it,
but why would I?
I tell you why, and a couple, I didn't feel radically healthier. I didn't feel radically more alert or less alert, but I found it a bit exhausting. I found being, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, in complete and utter control of my thoughts, exhausting. At least I there's a couple of times, a week or a month or whatever, where I need my thoughts to be controlled by something else, or I'll just think myself to death or something. So I don't know. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's the message from Alan Doyle on the radio today. Is if you're thinking about sobriety, don't go for it. I probably drank more than most people, enough for a lifetime probably.
What was it like going out and being the guy who's sitting there completely sober and everyone else is around you is drinking? Because it sounds like you didn't stay home, you didn't go up to your hotel room, you went out.
I wanted to do all that stuff, and it was like, I think anyone who's sort of had all my friends, my gal friends who've had babies and stuff and spent 9 months not drinking and that kind of stuff, they all attest to the same thing. And most of them anyway would say, like, being sober around drunk people is a real drag. my wife and all my friends who have gone through that say the same thing. And I remember, this whole notion I've joked for a long while, but you don't need alcohol to have a good time. All you need to have a good time is your friends. And I go, well, that's all well and good unless your friends are on alcohol. Because if they're on alcohol, again, I feel a little bit, this message feels really uncomfortable. but folks at home, I don't advocate, who's kidding who?
Maybe it's a good time to cut to another song before the message sinks in. How about Where the Nightingale Sings?
Well, thank you for bringing it up. I wrote so many songs for this record that were kind of, and not that it was that many, but it seems like a lot for me because I usually just write happy songs of celebration. That's where my instinct goes first, because music for me has always been about joy and nights out. It's just the way it's always been. And the Nightingale song, I just became a little worried that, and I've said this jokingly, but it's kind of true. I became a little worried that my mother would listen to it and think I was losing my mind or something like that, or depressed or something, So I wanted to write a song that Mom would like. And I swear, it's true. I mean her individually, but I kind of mean her as a group of people, there are people who I think look to me for joyous songs and lovely things, and I didn't want to have a whole record of Break It Slows where people are getting heartbroken left, right, and center, because I felt that wouldn't be a really honest, true reflection of where I am in my life, It's just, there's a few people breaking up and stuff, but I'm still generally very happy, So I wanted to write a song that was kind of lovely, and that's all. And I said, I don't want it to be anything else. I just want it to be a nice, lovely old song.
Now, is there a collaborator on this one, or is this?
Yeah, I wrote it with two friends, Gordy Sampson from Cape Breton and Kelly Archer, who's from British Columbia. And we sat in Nashville in the songwriting, hub, where Kelly and Gordy are entrenched in that that great lottery, right, for the next big single on someone's record, and they get hired, and that's their target almost, 40 hours a week is to write a hit song for someone. Now, everybody in that world, including Gordy and Kelly and all that class of people down there, are all multi-talented people, right? They're all very, very, but they always end up flexing the same muscle. They're always trying to write the next Keith Urban hit, or they're always trying to write some radio-friendly thing. So they very rarely get to flex any of the other muscles. So on this particular day, Kelly and Gordy, we met at Gordy's little shack in Nashville, and they sort of all sort of amped up, okay, so what are we going to go for? And I was like, why don't we open this bottle of wine and write a song our mothers would like? And you should have seen the look on especially Kelly's face. It was like the greatest relief ever. I said, the only rule, this can never get on the radio. This we can't write a single. And I said, here, I'll top it all off. It has to be a waltz. And it was like, all those other talents that they have and those muscles that they almost never get to flex, came out. And it was just, we wrote this song really quickly. And it just felt like a great relief to them. you know, to get to do something that was kind of very uncommercially oriented.
And does your mom like it?
I think so. She, well, I played her the record, shit, and she heard a bunch of the breakup songs, and I, as I suspect, there was a furrow in her brow, you know. And then when this one came out, she said, "Now that's a good song, honey. That's nice."
So this one goes out to the moms. Mm-hmm. Where the Nightingale Sings.
Yeah. Where the Nightingale Sing. Everyone loves the waltz, don't they? And a 1, 2, 3, go on, 2, 3. Meet me at midnight when the kingdom's asleep and the guards of the palace have long been at ease. Once out the window, follow my steps to us, and our shadows are all that is left. And we'll lift off our armor and let the moonlight steal in and lay me down, lay me down. Where the nightingales sing, lay me down, lay me down. Where the nightingales sing. We're long past surrender. The bower sets the stage, and with a single star spotlight, we're the leads of the play. Our stories are scripted in this secret show. We'll draw back the curtains and we'll see where it goes. Let our hearts take their places and let the night pull the strings and lay me down, where the nightingales sing. Lay me down, lay me down, where the nightingales sing. It's the same old sweet song tonight and tomorrow and on, stay with me, sway with me, love serenade as long as we stand and the band wants to play.
Lovely. I gotta say, I'm guessing more than moms love that one. It's beautiful.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I love that one too. The one's a joke I was on that one. I said, that one sings itself.
Yeah.
You don't even have to sing that one. It just goes on. Thank
you, Corey. It does have, you mentioned Nashville, it does have a Moonlight and Magnolia feel to it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of songs on this album where you're definitely getting into a different area. You've got some kind of new sound in country rock.
Yeah.
What was it like going to that kind of turf, which is not necessarily a great big sea turf? This
it was great. It was
area.
Great fun, and that was the whole point. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because I didn't want to go to Nashville and record songs that sounded like they were done in my basement, you know, like even though some of them were finished in my basement. But I wanted to go and live in other people's musical worlds. I mean, primarily all friends of mine, Gordy and Mike Post and Russell and, you know, Hawksley and Sean Panting and Ron Hines and all guys I've known for a long time, and I always wanted to do music their way. You know what I mean? I always wanted to learn how they do it. You know, and, you know, this kind of afforded me the opportunity to do that, right? And it's just, it was such a thrill to, you know, to go sort of dance in your buddy's shoes for an hour.
And that whole culture down there is so different. I mean, being here in Wisconsin, the South, the culture is completely different. And it's just the food.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you something about Nashville that I didn't know necessarily. I've been there a couple of times. But Nashville is and certainly has become a really, really, really international place. And I didn't expect it. About how, like, I think because, you know, the music business has sort of shrunk in many other cities in the world, that the best hip-hop engineers and the best, you know, gospel trumpet players and the best have all moved to Nashville. So, like, you go to Nashville and there's guys there doing heavy metal records.
Hmm.
And you go to Nashville and there's guys doing, you know, Texas swing records. And down the road, you know, Sheryl Crow is doing her new record and Elvis Costello is up the street doing an orchestra thing. And so all these sort of, it seems to have it's sort of concentrated. Like, it's like, so it's, and I say this not because I know for sure, but I suspect that, and I hope this is not a terrible thing, Nashville is less Southern than it once was.
Hmm.
And not that that's better or worse. It's become such an international place. And as a Northern person, you know, like we think of like, you know, the food of the South and this and the South, and there's lots of great food in Nashville. It's so awesome. And I was just in South Carolina on a little holiday down in Myrtle Beach area. And that was way more sort of, it was Southern, what I would call, you know, traditionally Southern than Nashville.
Hmm.
And it's a pretty cool place. Like, and it's, I think it's a lot more worldly than people think.
Sounds pretty cosmopolitan now.
Yeah. I mean, and not in an urban kind of way, but, or like in the clothes people are wearing or something like that. Not that kind of cosmopolitan or metropolitan, just worldly, like, in a really excellent kind of way, where there's a lot more influences and a lot more backgrounds there than probably there was 50 years ago.
It's still this legendary music city, mm-hmm. kind of the cradle of this music that came out of
yeah,
America.
Yeah, for good reason.
I mean,
yeah.
Do you feel that when you're down?
Yeah,
do you
totally.
Feel those roots?
I mean, I talked to Corey and Kendall and the guys about it, about how to be involved in a Nashville recording session is an amazing experience. And everybody who records music for a living should do one, because we have no idea where the bar is for being efficient at your instrument or at your recording or at your job in a studio or whatever. Like, those guys, you know, can do three songs in 4 hours for a reason. You know, it's because they're really, really, really good at what they do, you know. And that kind of thing is, it's just, I find that it, like, so I think some people would find that threatening or kind of, I was so thrilled to get a chance to run with those horses, you know, and to see if I could go through a day like that and come out with something listenable on the other side, you know, or if I just, you know, wilt in the corner or whatever. But it was, it's an incredible town. And I must say it's incredible in ways, all the ways I expected and in a whole bunch of ways I didn't expect.
We'll continue the conversation with Alan Doyle after this break. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm talking this hour with Alan Doyle, lead singer of the multi-platinum band Great Big Sea. He recently produced his first solo album, Boy on Bridge. So you've been all over the world. You've been to Nashville. You toured with Great Big Sea in Australia, it sounds like. Your buddy Russell Crowe.
He's an actor by trade.
He is an actor. Yeah. You might have heard of him.
Might have heard of him.
It's been a couple things.
He's a songwriter, as far as I'm concerned, but he moonlights constantly. Doing this silly acting thing he's got tied
and
up
he
in.
He co-wrote one of my favorite songs on here, which is Lover's Hands.
Oh, yeah.
I love that song.
Thank you. Yeah. That's a song we wrote while we were on the Robin Hood movie. And we've written about, you know, almost 30 songs together now. It's a bit of an unlikely partnership, I suppose. But we just it was the most organic thing. You know, it was just Russell was in Canada in the late 90s doing a movie about hockey called Mystery Alaska.
That was a great movie.
And my friend, since my friend Kevin Durand, who's a very, very big movie star in his own right now. Kevin was on that movie, and Kevin's from Thunder Bay, Ontario, which is not that far from here, I suppose, is it? Thunder Bay is about 10 hours from here, I suppose, driving. And Kevin sort of led the charge, I suppose, and spreading the word about Great Big Sea. He'd been a Great Big Sea fan. So Russell heard it, and a whole bunch of people heard it. And years later, when Russell was in Toronto doing a movie called Cinderella Man, we met up again in the most organic Canadian way possible. We were both giving out trophies at the NHL Hockey Awards. Seriously. And I was like, hey. And I'd heard a rumor that this famous actor fella knew about Great Big Sea music and actually covered one of our songs in his band. So, you know, being the shy guy that I am, I said, hey, man, I'm Alan Dial. He said, yeah, I know. I love your music. And I was like, well, I like your movies. That's awesome. And but we struck up a friend. He's like, we got chatting. He said, if you ever, you know, I'm in Toronto a lot now doing this movie. If you ever want to, do you think you'd like to spin by and we could write some songs? I got this band in Australia and we could, you know, I got some lyrics and do you want to come by and write a song? And I was like, well, Mr. Russell Crowe, I think that would be all right. I think I wouldn't mind dropping by and writing a song. And that's what we did. And we wrote a few. And then I ended up in Australia producing a record for the Toe Fog Band, and then I toured with that band in Australia and France, and then just doing music and wrote songs for the Great Big Sea Records and wrote songs for other people's records. And, you know, a couple of years ago, he called me and asked me if I knew how to play the lute. And I was like, yeah, I guess so. You know, sort of play the lute every night kind of thing. And he said, would you like to come to L.A. and read for this part in a movie? And I was like, what part is it, you know? If it's an Italian waiter, I'll probably be shagged. But what he said, no, we need someone to play the troubadour from the Merry Men. And I was like, that'd be awesome. So I went down to the read around the table with a bunch of guys and got the gig, and off we went.
Yeah, that was a fun movie. That must have been.
Yeah, it was quite an experience. I mean, it was the first real acting job I ever had. And, you know, it's with the best movie people on earth, you know. Mm. My first day on the set was me chatting to Ridley Scott, you know, about how I might deliver the one line I had.
It's hard to top like that, right?
I did what he said.
Yeah. You do a pretty good Russell Crowe impression, by the way.
Well, not sober, but no, we've had a great friendship, you know, and a great, he's been a big supporter of Great Big Sea and a big supporter of the band. Of me, and just a good guy, you know, the way he is with all his friends, for that matter. But it's just been an unlikely yet a very natural friendship and partnership. You know, it's great fun.
So you've been all over. You've been in Hollywood movies. You've hung out with Ridley Scott. And you still always go back to Petty Harbor. This is the fishing village where you're from in Newfoundland. Mm. How much of that Petty Harbor guy do you still feel inside
None.
You today, is he right? He's gone.
It's totally
he's like
gone.
Clean.
Yeah. No, I mean, these guys came in a bus, but my jet came in before. I never know how to answer questions, you know, like about that kind of thing, because I think the moment you start thinking about that, that's the moment that, you know, you've shagged it all up or something. You know, it's like I never once considered not being that fella from Petty Harbor. What's wrong with being that fella from Petty Harbor?
I can attest to 100%.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like
100%.
It's awesome. You know, and I've met, I've never been tempted to, never really occurred to me to do anything other than be that fella from Petty Harbor. I'd be terrible at it, to be honest. If I thought I'd get away with being like Joe Rockstar or something, trust me, I would. If I could get one, a DeLorean or something like that and bling gold, I would have it. I just... You know.
I just read something or heard something about how the number one regret people have when they die, this is from a hospice nurse, is leading a life that is not in alignment with who they are.
Yeah.
So I guess in that sense, you're in good
yeah,
shape.
Yeah, mine has to do with Pearl Chafe from Petty Harbor and when she wouldn't go to the hockey dance with me, but I understand what you're saying.
That's your biggest regret? Darn it, Pearl.
Sorry, Pearl.
So Boy on Bridge is the title.
I've never told her this. Now she's a wonderful lady and married and has a family of her own. And now hopefully I'm not shaming her too much on national radio. But I always wanted her to go to the hockey dance with me, but she was a bit older than me. And there's
so how many songs on your opus are actually written about Pearl?
Well, Pearls, a lot of them are about Pearls, you know, there's no doubt about it, you know, and... but that's just, it's kind of the whimsical nature of someone's life, I suppose, isn't it? You know, you write song about the girl you got and you write songs about the girl you didn't get. And, you know, you write songs about girls you hope to get, I suppose. You know, that, you know, we always joke, we have a friend, Barry, who's a friend, who was like, we always sit down and say, okay, Barry, we can write some songs, but we can't write more songs about girls. No more girl songs. So, like, you know, on this record, too, was kind of, it's just, you know, that kind of thing is a big part of, especially of your young life, you know, and it's the thing you're most fascinated with is, you know, trying to get someone to go to the hockey dance with you. So you end up writing songs about it, but the, anyway, I've gotten myself in trouble enough now. And you know what's interesting? I find Wisconsin has lovely weather.
Nice segue.
Anyway.
So.
Big girl hockey players here. Did you notice that? Great hockey team here.
Oh, yeah.
At the university around here.
Let's talk about the name of your CD, Boy on Bridge. This harkens back to your not at all forgotten roots in Petty Harbor. But where's the title come from?
It comes from the Internet Movie Database. And it's a website. I don't know if you know about it, but it's a website where you go, and if you're on television or something, your name is on it. You know, like it says, hey, Alan Doyle was on Robin Hood, played yada yada, right? Or... I think there are other people on there, but I only look at mine. And the I was made aware of this page by a buddy of mine a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And he said, you should go check it out because you can see all your television credits, blah, blah, blah. And so I went and looked, and sure enough, all the Great Big Sea stuff, the Rita McNeil Show, Great Big Sea, and the stuff, you know. But long, like this were all in the 90s, you know, like in 1992 or 1994, and there's one before any of that, like in the late 70s. You know, Alan Doyle, Boy on Bridge, in a movie called Whale for the Killing. And when I saw it for the first time, I looked at it and I was like, what is that? And I had this memory of me and my cousin Denny walking around looking at when Hollywood came to town for 2 summers in a row in my little fishing town. It was during just following the big Jaws movie craze, right? So they did a whole bunch of whale movies, you know, to follow it, I guess, you know, like kind of in that Hollywood copycat kind of way. And the first one they did was a movie called Orca.
That movie scarred me for life.
Yeah. And that movie was filmed in Petty Harbor.
Huh.
And then the following year, they did another sort of made-for-TV movie, I think called Whale for the Killing. And I just happened to be walking by looking at the famous people and stuff, and they grabbed me and my cousin Denny, I think, and said, can you go stand on the bridge there and just throw some rocks out while the actors walk past? Sure. They gave us $15, and I forgot about it, to be honest. Like, it never crossed my mind since. And lo and behold, you know, when I was in my mid-30s, I found out that I have a credit and that I've been a star without even knowing it for decades, and which I found quite appropriate. But the coolest thing about, and what I suppose I found most appealing about that whole title, the fact that I've been titled the Boy on the Bridge, that bridge in Petty Harbor is a significant sort of iconic piece of geography in my life, piece of architecture or whatever, because it's a long story, but you know, that river, it crosses the river in my little fishing town. There's only about 500 people in Petty Harbor, but it has in history, in my grandparents' time, for example, it's completely divided up the middle geographically, and on one side it's all Catholics and on the other side it's all Protestants. So there's a Catholic school, Catholic church, Catholic store, and a Catholic fish plant. And a Protestant equivalent on the other side, I swear. And in my grandparents' time, they would meet on that bridge and fight on the bridge. And in my parents' time, when it was starting to settle, they, like if my father wanted to go out with a Protestant girl, the term for it was crossing the bridge. And it looks like Tommy's going to cross the bridge by. And
wow.
And in my time, all that was kind of gone. But that bridge is where I sat and waited for the school bus. And that bridge is where I sat and hitchhiked to the Ghouls to try, you know, to meet up with buddies or whatever. Or I hitchhiked to St. John's to try out for bands from there. And like if I had one picture of myself as a young kid in Petty Harbor, it'd be a kid sitting on that bridge, you know, in my little town, you know, trying to get somewhere else, wondering what else there was to do. You know what I mean? When you grow up in a small town, you're fascinated by everything that's not in your small town. And in particular, Petty Harbor is surrounded by these big hills, and it's this carved little valley, and it's spectacular, and it's beautiful, and it's a great place to grow up. But when you're 15 or 14 or whatever, all you can think about is what else there is. And on that bridge is where I thought about that the most.
And now you know.
So far. Haven't been everywhere, but getting there.
Well, Kendall Carson on violin and vocals, Corey Tett for guitar and vocals, and Alan Doyle, the boy from Petty Harbor, the boy on bridge. What are you going to sing for our last song?
I think we're going to sing I've Seen a Little, which is probably a perfect way to come out of this conversation. It's really a very, two things. Lyrically, it's really about the sort of the journey of this whole record where, you know, my wanderlust for a new day musically or travel-wise hasn't stopped. I still want to keep looking to see what else we can do and what else there is to do, etc. Thank you, Randy. And musically, I found this kind of fun because I sat with Gordy and another writer named Troy Verges in Nashville. And again, those guys are always flexing the one muscle. I said, I want to do a song that every bar band in the world can play in one rehearsal. Like, I want it to be the dumbest chord changes we could possibly come up with. And, you know, I said, if it's going to be a poignant song, we'll do it in the lyric. But musically, let's do something that's really, really page one. So I had this is all I had. That's it. And I was like, that's the song. They're like, what else is going to be in it? That's it. The whole song is wrapped around that knockoff lick. And so we wrote the song, and it's sort of become the anthem for the record, if you will. It's called I've Seen a Little. Shall we do it all together? And one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four. It's a long way to heaven, it's a long way back. Take it from a sinner, it's a cold, hard fact. I kiss the bottle and it tastes like more. You got, it's what you're looking for. Around and around, up and down the old ball rolls, and I'm gonna miss it when I go, but it ain't gonna miss me. I've been over the moon and down on my luck. I've seen a little, but it ain't enough. Been down to the bottom and all the way up. I've seen a little, but it ain't enough. No, I've seen a little, but it ain't. It's what you're gonna do. It ain't where you've been, it's where you're going to. Lord, I'm sorry, St. Peter, I don't mean to complain. But can you give it just a minute before you call my name? There's nothing worse, nothing hurts like a stone unturned. And I've got candles left to burn and lessons left to learn. I've been over the moon and down on my luck. I've seen a little, but it ain't enough. Been down to the bottom and all the way up. I've seen a little, but it ain't enough. No, I've seen a little, but it ain't enough. I know that we got a long, long way to go. The other side of the world's only halfway home. There might be nothing down that road, but you never know. When I go, but it ain't gonna miss me. I've been over the moon and down on my luck. I've seen a little, but it ain't enough.
seen a little butter. I've been over the moon and down on my luck. I've seen a little butter, ain't enough. Been down to the bottom and all the way up. I've seen a little butter, ain't enough. I've seen a little butter, ain't enough. I've seen a little butter, ain't enough. Oh, yeah.
That was singer Alan Doyle and bandmates Corey Tetford on guitar and backing vocals and Kendall Carson on violin. Alan's new solo album, Boy on Bridge, was released in May. Today's show was produced and edited by Marika Suval with help from Brittany DeAnda. The program was recorded by Aubrey Ralph and Brittany DeAnda. I'm Veronica Rickert. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.